Good morning, church. Today is the second week of our five-week series on generosity, where in part today we're going to be looking at some of the stronger warnings that Jesus offers about our relationship with money. How if money is our priority, we'll end up hating God. How if money is our priority, our souls will become corroded with wickedness and evil, our relationships will be destroyed, and we will find ourselves in the end alone, hollow, miserable. And I promise you'll leave encouraged. Your whole human system and the entire universe is rigged to give itself away. Your whole human system and the entire universe is rigged, is set up, is created to give itself away. Knowing that humans will serve something, every human will serve something. Our choice is not to serve or not to serve. Our choice is what to serve. Knowing that a human will serve something, Jesus says this in Luke chapter 16, verse 13. No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Knowing that our choice is what to serve, not if we will serve, Jesus gives us those words. A life will be going in one direction or another. So if we give ourselves to serving the living God, we won't be able to serve money. And if we're giving ourselves to serving money, we won't be able to serve the living God. The point of a follower's of life's, the point of a life that is in pursuit of following Christ is to become like Jesus. The point of someone's life who is saying, I want to follow Christ, is to become like Jesus, to live like Jesus lived. Jesus' life was given away, so that becomes our goal, to give ourselves away. A servant exists to fulfill the will of the master. Whatever the master wants, that's what the servant is there for. What do you want, boss? That's what we're going to be doing today. So everything that comes to the servant, their opportunities, their money, their relationships, their talents, their experiences, it's not to build for the self, it's to build for the ones that they are serving. Humans, indeed, are like pipes. Humans are like pipes. They're meant to be flowed through. Pipes get really messed up when they try to hold on to things. Pipes are meant to be looked through. Pipes are built and designed so that things can go through them. This is pretty fun. Hi, Mike. Pipes are meant to be flown through. Pipes have dreams when they're little. When they're a little quarter inch PVCs, they can't wait to be the inch and a half. Man, then I'll really be able to have stuff flow through me. We're like pipes. If we try to hold on to things, it messes it up. That's the essential nature. And when we try to hold things, we all know what happens when pipes try to grab things. They get clogged. And they mess things up for themselves and everything on the other sides of the pipe. And when they hold things, they walk away from their essential pipedness. They're denying their true pipedness. We are meant to be given away for anything to have life. The whole system is rigged for it. For anything to have life, something must give itself away. Okay? Everything to be alive must consume something, right? To stay alive. And for something to be consumed, something else must have to die and give itself away. You're going to eat a plant, you're going to eat a mineral, you're going to eat an animal. An animal is going to eat a plant or a mineral, right? Everything, in order to survive and be going, something else has to give themselves away. That's how the whole entire system is rigged. Our human body themselves, I've heard this, that every 7 to 9 years, we replace all of our cells. Wow. 50 to 100 strands of hair will fall off of your body today, giving themselves away. It's some 10 billion flakes of skin will fall off of your body today. We replace our skin cells every 28 days, I've been told. I've also been told that 90% of household dust is skin flakes. So go ahead and keep vacuuming more than you think you need to. Be good. This is a picture of the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea borders the Jordan, it borders Israel, and it borders Palestine. And they call it dead because nothing lives in it. Because the Dead Sea violates the basic principle of the universe. The Dead Sea has fresh, life-giving, vibrant, alive water that flows into it. But the Dead Sea has no exit. It holds it all to itself. It never lets the water go. It keeps it right in itself, and that's part of what ends up killing it. The Dead Sea, you see, it sits around all day thinking, you know that Arabian Sea, that Caribbean Sea, that Mediterranean Sea, they are all way bigger than I am, and if I'm ever going to win, I can't let any of this water go. I got to keep getting bigger, and so every part that comes in, I'm holding it to myself. It violates the basic design of the universe. It does not allow what comes through it to go all the way through it. I see you, Chris Solomon. That's funnier to me than it is to you, but it's funny. I tell you, it is. Even if we can see the logic, though, even if we've been trained and we can mentally understand the concept, we still resist it. Even if we could see that concept playing itself out, we still resist it. You see, since Jesus walked this earth and people started trying to follow in Christ's patterns, trying to become like Jesus was and live like he did, each of those little pockets of people, those cultures, have unintentionally, most of the time, developed a level of what sins really matter and which ones don't. Almost always, the sins that really matter are the ones that that given culture is totally participating in. And so we find ways to ignore them or discount them or not give attention to them. And the ones usually that that culture is least likely to commit, we make a big deal out of those. So we know we're all doing good because we're not doing those things, but we like to do these so we don't make a big deal out of it. Jesus makes an enormous deal out of worry and fear. If you look at the Sermon on the Mount, which is considered Jesus' essential teachings on what it is that the kingdom of God is all about, which is what his whole message is all about, he makes a very big deal about worry and fear. He spends the most time on that, word for word. He spends the most time on it. Because these sins are a big deal to Jesus, because they get at the heart of unbelief. We cannot be believing and trusting in God and at the same time be living in fear and in worry. When we live in fear and worry, we try to do things in order to make ourselves not be afraid and worry. And our culture's go-to is hold on to wealth. Store it up. I'm afraid because I'm vulnerable in this world. What will make me not afraid? If I have a lot of money, or enough money, or this much, then we get afraid because of our unbelief, and we try to hold on to things. You see, so we fear and we try to make ourselves not be afraid, and we hold on to things. We become just like the borders of the Dead Sea and try to make them a little bit taller so that we don't lose anything. We think by holding on, we will be safe. We think by holding on, we'll be made secure. You see, Jesus spends more time on this one than anything else in his Sermon on the Mount. Here's a portion of it. In Matthew chapter 6, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? In Luke chapter 12, Jesus is approached, as he often was, by two brothers, an older and a younger brother, who were having a dispute over family money. And it was getting ugly. Have any of you ever witnessed or been a part of a dispute about family money? It can get ugly. As according to the customs of that culture, the older brother got everything and the younger brother wanted his fair share. And Jesus refuses to participate in their debate. Instead, he cuts right to the heart of this and what Jesus describes this man as foolish, precisely because he's trying to hold on to things and he builds these bigger barns. Instead of figuring out ways to give away what he's had or be generous with it, he decides to be bigger barns because this foolish man, as Jesus describes him, he thought that life was about collecting. He thought it was about gaining. He thought it was about adding to what he already had. So he built bigger barns to store all of his stuff. And Jesus tells the crowd directly, in the middle of that example of a person hoarding up more for themselves, Jesus tells them, take care. Be on guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. If we are trying to find life by gaining things, by clinging to what comes through the pipe, we end up losing our life. And Jesus describes that as foolish. Let's not be naive. Money has power. And if we're not watching out, when Jesus says watch out, it's the same type of impetus that he would be saying to like a soldier who's standing guard. Be alert. This will take you down. It's not something you put third or fourth on your list. Pay attention because there is a power there and you need to pay attention to it. Jesus is saying this is like fire or dynamite is money. If you mess with it the wrong way, it will destroy you. If you use it in the right way, it can do all measure of positive and excellent things. We know that we're becoming servants to money. You'll either serve God or we'll serve money. We know that we're becoming servants of money, one of the red flags that should rise up in all of our minds. We know that we are becoming servants to money when what we want of it is more. When we cave into envy or greed, when we cave into envy and greed, this is what we want, just like the brothers in Luke chapter 12. Perhaps you've seen this video. I was told it went kind of viral not too long ago. Researchers wanted to know, with monkeys, the power of envy and of greed. Isn't it a riveting video? So they got two monkeys in cages and they trained them, as you'll be using your imaginations to discover, that if they taught one monkey how to give a rock back to them, they would offer him a cucumber. No dice? Well, you'll just have to use your imaginations. Mike, you want to try that one? What they did was they gave a monkey a rock, and if the monkey would give the rock back to them, they would give it a cucumber. The one monkey was thrilled with the cucumber. Thanks for the cucumber. I love cucumbers. They're so delicious. They had a monkey in a cage right next to it. They taught him the same thing. I'll give you a rock. If you give it back to me, you get a grape. In monkey land, grape is much better than cucumber. Okay? And so while they were trying to, they gave the other monkey the grape. And the one monkey who was at one point satisfied with the cucumber now becomes enraged. Here it is. Thanks for the rock. How about a cucumber? I love cucumbers. Thank you so much. Here's a rock. Thanks for the rock. I'll give it back to you. What do I get if I give it back to you? A grape. Wow. Hey, what? Grape? Okay, I'll give me the grape now. Well, no, you get the cucumber. That's what yours is. I don't want a cucumber. Get this cucumber out of here. Hey, wait a minute. I like grapes better than that. Who cares what I used to have and what was good? They get another grape? Give me the grape. All right, fine. Okay, this time I'll do your little game. Here you go. There's your rock. Now give me the cute. Wait, what? No, sir. Get out of here. I refuse to accept that. Don't you dare give them that. I deserve. That's the story right there. Is it not? Thanks, Mike. That's the story right there. It's that we're looking over the shoulder. We know we are servants to money when we're starting to function like the monkey. We know we're servants when what we want is more, when we feel like my life would be better if I had what I would be so much further along and things would be going well for me if I only had. You see, we become servants of this. And you know, you'd think that in a culture like ours, the Christian community would be pumping out volumes of books and seminars about how to be careful about the dangers of wealth, but not so on this soil, right? Breaking the 10th commandment is what we do. Don't covet. That's what our whole system is rigged on. And as I say that, I know there's a lot more to say about that, and there's a lot of it, but let's not be naive is what I'm saying this morning. Let's not be naive. This stuff will take us and it will ruin us if we do not treat it as God would have us treat it. Because in some sense, I mean, aren't we even there right now? Have you started your Christmas shopping? Well, shoot, what do I buy this person? They have everything. They have everything. What are we supposed to, there's so much more to say about all of that in our economy, but let's not be naive. Money has a power, and it will take us over, and it will make us subservient to it, and its job is to own us, and if we're not careful with it. The monkey, you see, cucumber monkey, had 0% chance of being joyful while it was looking at grape monkey. Cucumber monkey had 0% chance of being content or grateful because what it wanted was more. You know, I think that Tom Wright, New Testament scholar N.T. Wright, says it best when he says, money is not a possession. It's a trust. It's a trust. It's meant to be flown through us, not held onto and grasped by us, but flow through us. It's given to us to serve the kingdom. It's given to us to draw people under the reign of Christ. It's not given to me so that I can make my perfect kingdom of Bert, where all of my days perfectly submit to my preferences. That's what our culture tells us is its job, but our living God tells us it's actually to do something else. Now, I wonder why cucumber monkey. I wonder about cucumber monkey this week. And I wondered why couldn't cucumber monkey rejoice in the good fortune of grape monkey? Why couldn't cucumber monkey be excited about what grape monkey was going on? Jesus said that we'll love one or we'll hate the other. If we think I'm living the dream when I get enough, we will only become more miserable like cucumber monkey became. That is our story. You see, Jesus also said in John chapter 15, when he's giving some summation remarks about what it really is to live in this kingdom and follow in his ways. In John chapter 15, Jesus told his disciples, remain in me. I am your source. I am the vine. You are the branch. So remain in me and follow my commandments, which is to love one another, and love, of course, is to give. Jesus is saying to his disciples, you must give yourself away in order to really live. That's what he's telling them. I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you give yourself away like I have given myself away, that's when you'll start to find life. And in a very unique moment of explanation, Jesus tells them in that same teaching, I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Give yourself away so that my joy can be in you. I'm not telling you these things so that you will be miserable, so that you will lack. I'm telling you these things so that you can find where true joy actually is. Jesus I think in some ways it's impossible to underestimate how completely right Jesus was, how completely accurate his teachings are. You know, it was in 2015 that brain researchers, led by the team of Richard Davidson, reported in the World Happiness Report of 2015 that there are now conclusively four brain circuits in all of our brains that, when activated, give a human being the sense of, I'm good, things are well, and I like what's happening in the world. They are the things that make somebody happy. The first two, I think, are very obvious. One, of course, is a positive outlook. When people look at the world positively, that is, when we measure up all the things that are going on, we find the positive thing and we give ourselves to that. In essence, the exact opposite of what contemporary media is today. All news media tries to find what is the worst because it knows that that's what's going to stick and that's what we'll give ourselves to. People do not tell stories today about the hundreds of nurses who went out of their way just last night to make patients a little bit more comfortable. They don't tell stories about all the cops that did the right thing and protected this community and served it. They don't tell stories about the hours and hours and hours that teachers give. Those are thousands of stories happening every single week just here in Northern Colorado. We don't get those. We only focus on the negative, and that's what we're trained to do. And so that's how we see the world, and we all think it's falling apart, when in reality is, no, it's really not. We're just focusing on the wrong things. There's so many more positive stories than there are negative stories. That one's obvious. If you focus, have a positive outlook, obvious, right? Number two, they said, is when you bounce back from negative emotions. Life takes all of you down. Guaranteed, this week, something will happen in your life that will knock you on your back. It will happen. And those who are able to rebound with consistency are going to be contented. That's obvious, right? Life knocks us all down. If we can rebound, we'll be more joyful. The third one, not so obvious, is when we're able to give ourselves to just one thing at a time. Focus. Mind wandering and attention squirting all over the place. That's what causes for discontent. But we're able to be with a person and only just be with that person. We're able to give ourselves to one job at a time. That's not so obvious, but that's what's in there. And number four is exactly what Jesus told us 2,000 years ago. We didn't need to spend all the time on medical research. We could have just trusted Jesus. But it's when we generously give ourselves away to others, serving others. When we are serving other people, that's one of the main, of the four main circuits that gives a human being joy. You know, even just thinking about being generous, like right now, if you start thinking about how you could be generous, it's boosting your immune system. That's how powerful Jesus' teaching was. He didn't say these things to make us miserable. He told us these things and exemplified it in his life so that we would be those kind of people that have the type of joy that Jesus has. You know, we think because of the world that we live in, we have to obey the law of the jungle. I will eat you before you eat me. We don't have to obey the law of the jungle. In fact, Martin Luther King said it best when he said, we must learn to live together as sisters and brothers, or we will perish as fools. We must learn to live together as sisters and brothers, or we will perish together as fools. When I woke up on Friday morning, I did not want to do the hard work of finishing a sermon on generosity. And I did not want to go to the men's retreat. Probably for many other reasons. Most men who are up there didn't quite make it for whatever reasons. Didn't want to go. Man, I got so much going on. I just need some not that. I just need to be slow. I just not want to. But I had to sit down and write a sermon on generosity. And I couldn't not go to the men's retreat. And so I felt the Lord say, just sit down for 1 minute and trust me. Just trust me on this. And quit trying to figure out what you think is going to make you happy and give yourselves over to it. And like normal, in the finishing out of a sermon where I really feel like the Lord's in it, I'm in tears. You're going to use me? This is beautiful. I had one of the best weekends of my fall. Not because I did anything special, I wasn't even responsible for anything, but just because I was able to sit with excellent men and receive their belief and trust one another as we leaned in and told stories about what's really going on in our life and the masculine energy and power that is in that when we feel like we are in this thing together with other men was fantastic. And it gave me everything I needed because I stopped holding on to it and just said, okay, fine, and let it go. I'll give myself to this. What if it's not about me anyway? What if it's about what I can participate and give to? And what if it's about what flows through me instead of what I'm trying to hold on to? It was actually a much better time. You know, we all want to be great philanthropists in this life. I'm convinced of that. We all want our lives to have an impact, and we all want it to go beyond us. And I think that sometimes that's exactly what's holding us back from starting in on our generosity process. We want to be great philanthropists. We want to have huge impact in this world that we're living in. But I just needed on Friday morning to take one bloody step with what was right in front of me. And I think that's what gets us started. When we're able to recognize what is standing in front of us and just simply take one step with it and allow God to do what God is going to do. All great big contributions that we see in this world are simply a compilation of faithful steps along the way, a million small things that pull us together. Church, as you leaving here today after we visit the table of communion, don't think about how you can be generous tomorrow. Think about how you can be generous before you leave those doors. Don't think about how you're going to be generous in the new year. Think about how you can be generous with what God has put in your pipe before the sun sets today. As we're faithful with the small, larger and larger opportunities continue to present themselves. It was the Archbishop Desmond Tutu who was asked in an interview recently, how is a person supposed to maintain joy in serving when we know that no matter how much we serve, there's going to be heartbreaking suffering all around us, no matter how much we do? He paused and he told them this. As an old man, I can say, start where you are. Start where you are. Realize you're not meant to resolve all of the world's problems, and then you'll be surprised at how big the impact is. We all want to be generous philanthropists, giving away zillions, making everything different. We are pipes, though, meant to allow to flow through what is before us, what is actually in us, what is given to us right now, instead of holding on to it. We're meant to take away the sewage of this world by allowing it to flow through us. We're meant to bring in the fresh water, the healthy resource of whatever is needed. We cannot serve both. If we're giving ourselves to finances, we'll end up hating God. But if we're giving ourselves to the living God, we'll find the joy that Jesus is talking about in giving ourselves away. It's precisely, I'm convinced, it's precisely what Jesus meant when he pulled those 12 closest to him for the final time before he ultimately gave himself away in his body and in his blood. He took the bread and he broke it and he gave it to his disciples. And he told them very specifically, do this in remembrance of me. As you are remembering me, bringing me into reality, into the world that you are going to be living in, do this. Allow your body to be broken and given away. In the same way, he took the cup, and as Paul reminds us in the Corinthians letters, he poured it out. And he told his disciples after supper, this is the new covenant, the new agreement of how things are between God and humanity. And it's in my blood. Do this in remembrance of me. Allow your body to be given away, yourself. Allow your blood to be shed, yourself given away entirely. This morning, all followers of Christ are warmly invited to come and participate at the table. We'll have three stations. The silver cup has juice. The glass cup has wine. Tear off a piece of the bread, his body, dip it into the cup. The station on your right will have the gluten-free option. This morning as well, all of us are on a unique journey, and some of us could use some prayer this morning. For that, we'll have our staff members up here in stations where if you have a prayer for anything that you would like today, we would love to be praying for you here this morning. Come and receive the bread and the cup.